chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I am thrilled to have Art McCoy on the show today. Art is the CEO and Superintendent of Schools of the Jennings School District. Art, I am thrilled that this worked today and you made the time to be on the show. I know just how busy you are. Thank you so much for making the time.
It's a pleasure to be with you and your esteemed audience. It's just always a pleasure to see your face.
You and I have many mutual friends. And one of our mutual friends recently, Tim Wentworth, said, Lisa, you really should have Art on the show. So I'm really glad that he mentioned that. And we've got so much to talk about. But, you know, let's just talk a little bit about your growing up. I know you grew up here in St. Louis.
So my background includes one of great perseverance, I would say. I was born to two parents who were ministers by the time I came along. But I like to tell it this way. My mom had me at 43, and doctors encouraged her to not have me because they said I would be born as a mongoloid child or mentally handicapped. And she did not believe in putting an end to her child's life. She just went to church, prayed through it, had people lay hands on her stomach, and she often played the organ for the church and so forth. My dad was the pastor, and she pressed through and had me, and I'm thankful to God that I turned out okay. She sacrificed so much. I mean, I literally sucked the calcium out of her and a lot of life out of her, and she ended up losing her teeth 5 years after I was born, and slowly, one by one, and she became legally blind, acquired glaucoma. And so by the time I was five, my mom was legally blind and needing support, and my dad was a one-leg amputee, lost his leg really early in life as like a three-year-old. So ultimately, perseverance was the key to surviving, traversing through just difficult times, but having to work as a unit and as a family together. So often have your child be the eyes of the family or be a doer to help and support. I'm just thankful that they taught me that you could do anything and that you can persevere past anything and that you can make any problem you have as a springboard for your purpose and a springboard for understanding your character within you to springboard you towards a destiny. So that was what I was raised around. Very faith-filled people, purpose-filled people who pushed past any problems and used it to further develop the purpose. And so I really learned early on who I think I wanted to be and what I wanted to contribute. And I knew it had to do with communication and helping and serving other people. Fast forward to my middle school, high school range, I literally began to look for a wife by eighth grade. And that's a strange thing to do, to look for a wife at eighth grade, ninth grade. Some of that had to do with me trying to make an ideal home setting and like I felt like I could create and having the ability to do so. So, and by the time I was in ninth grade, I found the person that I thought I wanted to be my wife. And I said to, at that time, my older brother, Tim, who was someone who worked hard, was an air flight attendant, and then became a teacher. When he was teaching at Riverview Gardens High School, where I was at in my freshman year, and I met the person who I thought would be my wife, I told my brother, I said, I'm going to marry her. And sure enough, I said, I have a plan and I know how to do it. And I said, I'm going to become her best friend. closer to her than her own mother is. And I worked towards being her best friend. And by 17, we were married and by choice. And my parents emancipated me, signed over the rights for me to be my own adult, to be married. She was a little bit older. She was 18, but same grade level. And it's 25 years later, and we're still married. And God blessed the plan, because I said, that's going to be my wife. And then we began to plan out when we would get our degrees and what college we would go to and when we would have a child 10 years after being married, so that you can have enough money to have your child afford a Happy Meal or provide a Happy Meal for your child, because every child deserves a Happy Meal. I set that rule because my parents couldn't afford a Happy Meal for me, even though I wanted that toy and I wanted to get that Happy Meal. It wasn't there. So I said, hey, well, I can have this for my child. But it takes planning and purposeful action. And we did it. And so I think that was the greatest decision I ever made, was to get my life in order enough to then find a spouse, and then selecting that spouse. She's definitely my first and best decision as a human being, to make me better, to help me grow, but also to have an impeccable focus. So it kind of follows that, you know, I graduated early from high school by 17. And then that led to me graduating from college at 19 and not even purposefully trying to be, but becoming the youngest teacher, certified teacher in the state of Missouri. But before becoming a certified teacher at age 19 with a bachelor's degree, I was an 18-year-old substitute teacher with 65 college credit hours by 18. And by 17, I was doing some teaching of college students and counselors of schools on peer mediation and dismantling racism. And, you know, that takes me back to like 14 and 15. When Rodney King incident occurred in L.A., it kind of affected Missouri and St. Louis. And there were some protests. There were some walkouts of school, I recall, as a freshman in high school and as a sophomore as well, because the issue in St. Louis was whether or not to end the desegregation program, where a majority of African-Americans were transferred by bus to suburban schools that had less than 10% African-Americans. And so it was on the table to end. And so some of the protests for the Rodney King merged with the protests for ending desegregation. And as a 14 or 15 year old, I found my voice in the middle of that. And I actually uttered the words at Lafayette High School in Rockwood School District in Wildwood to an auditorium of students. Can't we all just get along? The same words that Rodney King said on TV, but I said it to students who were fighting about whether Blacks should stay or go and whether that program should end. And they actually listened. And they sat down and we discussed and we mediated our issues. And that's when my principal, Dan Edwards, said, you have a gift. If people are going to listen to you and you're able to articulate in a way that touches them, that's a gift. That's leadership. Why don't you go say that to Channel 2 and Channel 4 and Channel 5 and to KMOX and tell them what just happened? And doing that as a 14-year-old, that began the formal process of me learning how to communicate, me learning my leadership skills, engaging in what was then created in this area to be peer mediation in schools, where students speak to other students to solve and resolve conflicts without an adult mediator, which was very important at that time. And then I ended up teaching those classes at Truman University as a 16-year-old high school student, teaching aspiring teachers and aspiring counselors how to start peer mediation groups in school systems as a 15, 16-year-old student. So that's my childhood. It's kind of a blur, but it was a full court press.
I'm just sitting here thinking, Art, you were an old soul, because I knew that. I knew that you were teaching at the age of 19. I'm thinking, how in the world did that happen? But I just love the focus and the drive and the purposefulness of your life at a very early age.
Well, I appreciate that. I think one soundbite sticks and rings true through my childhood, and that is the pain of poverty can propel you to your purpose. So if you really are dependent on your next meal, or you're dependent upon your work for a brighter day, I mean, like, I remember being in my home on a Wednesday at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock, and my parents being at a Bible study, leading 20 people in Bible study and so forth. But I'm at home and I'm like 13, 14. And I remember a TV show coming on called MASH. The theme song really penetrated my heart, and it made me, you know, really understand that we have to push past our any poverty or any kind of problems to kind of produce something greater with your purpose. Now, I didn't know at 13 and 12 that the theme song to MASH is Suicide is Painless. That's the actual name of the song. But I can tell you that it definitely had articulated that through a musical, poetic way, that, you know what, you're lonely, you're in isolation, and you have to do something, because otherwise you can fall into a deep abyss. And so like I said, my mother was playing the organ as she had me in her stomach. I just happened to become a musician and start playing the piano and the organ and the church organ by 10 and 13. And then studying Nat King Cole is the first person I started to model my playing after. And then other people like Herbie Hancock, Chick Corea, and so forth, and got a scholarship for jazz piano by 16. But the music kind of penetrated to hearts, and I understood how music produces a spirit. And I can remember as a 13-year-old hearing that song of Suicide is Painless and the spirit behind it. And I said, I have to do something to make tomorrow better than yesterday. So, you know, basically just taking it one step at a time to do as best you can.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what you've done with your life. And now you are a champion for others and for kids. And so I want to talk about that. You've done so much. You went on to get your master's degree. You got your PhD. But talk a little bit, because I know that you spent a little time out in California. And you were the chief academic officer for the Mind Research Institute and Base 11. And I told you I was doing some research and was so impressed by what they're doing. But this is all stemmed from, I think you have a mathematics background. You know, tell a little bit about that experience and what they were trying to do with Base 11 and the Mind Institute.
So the Mind Research Institute, in its origin, and Mind was an acronym for music actually having an impact in the neuroscience development. And that's what MIND stood for, that there were correlations between music and mathematics and your ultimate understanding of things and your development of your neuroplasticity. And so actually, I was an assistant superintendent of schools when I was first introduced to MIND research. I was the first African-American superintendent of schools in Ferguson, Florissant School District at age 33. And while being that superintendent, I was at a professional development and I spoke on mathematics leadership and some things we were doing in our district. And then the CEO and founder of MIND at that time, Matthew Peterson, who's a brilliant neurologist and coder, he was presenting right after I presented, and we both fell in love with each other's spirit and ability to actually make things happen. And so he invited me to come to Mind Research Institute as a consultant and their chief academic officer, CAO, and superintendent in residency. And I was there for an entire school year for the 14-15 school year as their chief academic officer. And so basically, by that time, the organization had transitioned from music and mathematics and neural development plasticity, and they were still doing R&D on that. And it is, I mean, the Mind Research Institute, so it's very much about neurology. But it had moved into game-based learning, and the organization had created thousands of different game scenarios and video game situations that students could ultimately play video games and learn all the math that's required up to calculus without using one word. So without words. And so the whole premise behind it, and being a math major myself and knowing the connection to STEM and my contributions as well to it, was to help to have basically math be taught without any words, and to help even especially brown students and black students, so Latinos and students with other languages, have no barriers because of the language gap towards really understanding the concepts and the context that we were trying to show them. So how did it do it? So when you created math problems and math situations and scenarios through game-based learning, it was about conceptual learning. It was about transference of knowledge. It was about literally showing them the concept. The greatest example I can give you that I give people is this. Imagine if you have a cup with water on your table and you spill that water accidentally on the table and the water spreads out across the table in all sorts of directions. Well, that's not random. That's triple integral calculus. So ultimately, if you can understand the rates of change of that water spreading on the table, how fast it's moving and in what directions and what the curvature of the water is, it would look like on a sheet of paper a triple integral function where you have three of the what looks like an F. That's how you would write what's happening on the table with the water that spilled. So the concept is this. If you can literally give a person the concept of the water spilling and then back into the symbols of the equations on how to scientifically show that, then we believe that any kid could learn calculus as early as even fourth grade and fifth grade. But you must start with the conceptual understanding, the number sense, the physical representation first. And video games help people to do that for hours upon hours, and they don't want to stop, and they have gratification by, you know, getting certain awards and certain symbols, and kids just eat it up in a way that helps them go. So it was a pleasure to work with them on seeing math become alive through transfers of knowledge, some base knowledge that they understand, some foundational knowledge, but then breaking down concepts so that they get complex concepts without even knowing that it's, you know, high level thinking.
So innovative, but meets a kid where they are, right, Art? And I love, you know, how you're talking about just these simple things in life and making that connection, connecting the dots for the child so that they can see how math.
It's so important. I mean, think about it this way. So as a 19-year-old math teacher at Lafayette High School, I was already talking to students about, I'm holding up a less than sign by my two fingers. Then I'm holding up a greater than sign with my right hand. And then I'm holding up an equal sign with my two pointing fingers for my left and my right hand underneath each other. And those teachers next door were thinking, oh, Art McCoy, he's throwing up gang signs. No, I'm throwing up the less than, greater than, equal to, but it's transferring it in a way that lets kids know, okay, if you live in Wildwood and it's a required acre for your home, and you live in, let's say, Eureka in a trailer park, and there's no required acre, or you live on 20th Street in St. Louis, Missouri, what makes the value of one land less than, or what makes the value of Wildwood greater than? Or really, is the value of your life equal to the value of another person's life? That was a concept when I was teaching geometry and even algebra and pre-algebra that made our test scores off the roof, because I taught less than, greater than, equal to as it relates to their life and their property for what they were having, so they could understand. But that understanding came from one of these excursions in my life at age 16, when I was in En-ROADS, and En-ROADS gave me a test, like an IQ test and so forth. And they said, you need to become an actuary scientist. And I studied the first two actuary exams. I literally got an offer for the job by 18. I went to Chicago and talked to the CEO of what was then Hewitt Associates. And he said, you're going to do great, make a lot of money, and just keep doing what you're doing, because you got personality, you got math skill. And he said, I make tons of money, $1 million a year, so forth. I'm about to fly to San Diego right after I speak to you. So I just wanted to say hello. And he left. And I went to a cubicle to do mortality tables to figure out how much to charge someone in insurance based off of their value of life, where they lived, what education they had, and so forth and so on. And I saw that the value of a Black male's life was about the price of a Toyota. And I quit on the first day. I said, I'm gone, because I'm on the wrong side of the equation. I want to be on the side that gives value of life, not assesses value of life. And I called my high school principal and said, hey, you said that when I graduated and walked across the stage early, that if I ever needed a job, you would give it to me because of my ability. And I'm prepared. I have a math degree and a teaching certification. I've already done substitute teaching at 18. I want to come back home to do what we did when I was talking about dismantling racism and can't we all just get along? But I would love to teach math. And he said, you're hired. And that's how I became a 19-year-old teacher, by that relationship with my principal. But then when I got into that classroom, I kept those notions of what actuaries do, and that is assess values using systems. And so when we taught it in class, geometry, mathematics, it was about the concept and the reality of it first. And then let's write a few equations and do some problems, some word problems, not a bunch of drill and kill, just meaningless word numbers and symbols. When you marry that philosophy of education, that all of this stuff, math, numbers, math class, it's for the question that all kids ask, why do I have to learn this? Why only teach from the domain of why this is important? Everything else is irrelevant if it's not useful and practical. So when I merged with the Mind Research Institute, they were all about the transfers of knowledge and why this is important, learning how to think and how to have control of your environment. That was a good place.
Well, thank you so much for that story, because now we understand the pivot. And then you have dedicated the rest of your life to kids and championing kids and education. So we're going to talk more about that and talk about what you're doing today, but we'll be right back with Art McCoy.
We at Technology Partners understand the difficulty to find work that is engaging, yields high pay, and facilitates a work-life balance. Over the past 25 years, we have enhanced the IT teams of over 244 client companies and placed more than 3,000 IT professionals with them on short-term or permanent basis. Our staff includes over 300 experienced IT professionals, so if you're looking to take the next step in your career, visit jobs.technologypartners.net, apply for a job, and one of our expert recruiters will be happy to connect with you.
So Art, I want to transition into what you're doing today because you guys are doing some amazing things. So you're the superintendent of schools at Jennings.
Yes.
And I know Jennings is an older school district, right?
That's correct.
I'll read the mission. The mission is to ensure that each student develops a passion for learning through challenging curricula, rigorous academic standards, innovative, stimulating educational environment, and a passion that education is a lifelong pursuit. And I know that since you've been there in 2016, this has been your focus. You've been very focused,
definitely,
very goal-oriented. So because of that, you guys have done really some outstanding things and are really an exemplary of how a school should operate. So let's talk about Jennings a little bit and what all you've
done. Sure.
So
let me talk about that transition from California to Jennings. So after being at Mind Research Institute, then I was also at the Base 11 Centers for Innovation and Education, and we focused on career pathways for kids in the California and DC area and in the Midwest. And I literally was responsible as the CAO of Base 11 as well for getting about 20,000 kids onto a career pathway into the STEM and STEAM areas. So having Base 11 as a foundation for me and being a Harvard's Pathways to Prosperity class taker and a certificate holder and leader across the nation, that was in 2013, before I even went to California, I learned about the apprenticeship models in Germany. I learned about apprenticeships and entrepreneurship from a global vantage point through Harvard, and then did some of that leadership in California at Base 11, which was different than Mind Research Institute. And then I was recruited to come back home, and I was able to implement every single one of the forward-thinking plans for workforce development in the system that Jennings School District is. So Jennings School District has about 2,600 students. And there were four bold, hairy, audacious goals, as we talked about it often in California, four BHAGs. That's good old business language from the past. And those goals that all Jennings students receive were this: they get up to 65 college credit hours for free while in high school, so that they can earn an associate's degree by the time they graduate. That's guarantee number one that a student can have. They get a guaranteed paid internship before graduation so that you can actually have students understand the career, work in the career, not only have awareness, not only have mentorship, not only have exposure, but literally get on that track for a career pathway. So literally, we have students making $25 an hour from Neaton House Construction in our Academy for Construction Engineering. And we have about seven other academies, Academy of IT. Students are able to get Cisco CSense certifications. They're able to get Microsoft certifications, CompTIA A+ certifications. But that comes from our academies of career workforce development. So every student can get a job and a career pathway. That's guarantee number two. Every child gets entrepreneurship classes by seventh grade, but definitely again in high school, they get taught entrepreneurship. They learn what we call power skills, what most people call soft skills, how to show up on time, how to speak well, be well-dressed, well-spoken, well-presented, well-traveled, well-understood workers. Those are the essential power skills to people who may not have parents who have demonstrated that power, understand that power. The last thing that they ultimately get is really a champion community behind them that would raise funds and do whatever it takes. We raise about $2 million to $5 million of private funds of money every year so that kids can go on college experiences, college visits to Harvard, to Yale, to MIT. And literally, we have students, our first kid who got a perfect on the math section of the ACT and a scholarship to Harvard. In the history of Jennings, it came from that exposure. And so that's the last one, where we guarantee them exposure of a lifetime so that they can understand who they are, where they're going, and then fulfill their purpose, a life plan. Now, that should sound familiar to the listeners, because it's literally what I had to do as a 14-year-old when I said, I want to get married. The difference is that was Art McCoy doing that plan as a high schooler at Lafayette High School. Here, the system is created so that the plan and the roadmap already exists. You have a career pathway, you have a college pathway, and the paveway has already been laid and the highway is set. So now you just have to get on that highway. And that's how we're able to make those four bold, hairy, audacious guarantees to every kid. And so with those guarantees, we've had 100% graduation for 4 years in a row. And then some people will say, okay, well, you're just socially promoting the students. You know, they graduate, but they can't read. Okay, we've had 100% career and college placement for the past 4 years. Every one of them is going to college, or every one of them is in a career with a career plan. Well, you can't do that and not be able to read, because you know what? You got to be able to produce in order to stay employed. And so some people say, okay, well, that's pretty significant and unique, but I'm still not impressed. Okay, well, we had a student 3 years ago, graduated at age 17 with an associate's degree before he got his high school diploma and a Cisco CSINT certification. And he went to MIT for the visit that Tim Wentworth helped pay for. And he had to make a choice between getting hired from a local tech firm, getting $65,000 a year, or choosing to go to Chicago Institute of Technology after visiting MIT to go for the big bucks and the big purpose and the big future. So we had to become life coaches to him to say, turn down that $65,000 job. That's the highest money your family's ever made. The highest you were getting paid that as an intern already, as a CSINT certified worker doing networking, and understand the big picture. And he's doing just fine now, about to finish his bachelor's slash year within computer science. And then I already mentioned the other student, Malik, who is the first kid in the history of Jennings to get a full scholarship to Harvard and get a perfect score in the math section of the ACT. That's the results. The proof is in the pudding. Our students are amazing because our staff and our leaders, our warrior leaders, are amazing. We have incomparable, amazing teachers, principals, central office staff, HR personnel, and IT personnel, and CIOs. And this community will do whatever it takes so that not only will children survive, but they will thrive. And so that's why we wrap around all services that they need. We're the only school district to have two homeless shelters that actually take in the homeless. We feed them, we clothe them, we give them education, we give them money for exposure to the private things that private school students are able to get, like trips to other states and college visits and to museums and to parks and so forth. They get treated like they deserve to be treated. We're the only school system that has two operating grocery stores, two food hubs, one in a school that students operate, and then one in our alternative school that students operate and staff and adults operate, so that we give 100,000 pounds of food every week to any parent on a daily basis. And that's really special right now during COVID. We gave over 1.5 million pounds of groceries away in the last 2 months. And then you have the third thing that we're the only organization to do, but we first have two school-based clinics. One is the SPOT clinic ran through Washington University, but at Jennings High School. The other one is the CARE STL clinic ran at Fairview Elementary School. All of our kids get all health care at no cost. Dental, visual, mental health, as well as immunization shots and minor surgeries at no cost. And then you add to that parent-child interaction therapy. And so we were the first in the state and the third in the country to implement that in schools. Well, that's a situation where some families have experienced extreme trauma to the point where there is no normalcy, not even a bonding or even much love between the parent and the child or the parents and themselves. And there's a breakdown because of extreme trauma. There's a need to reconstruct the empathy in the hearts, the boundaries for conversations. How do you correct and discipline? How does a student get the attention of their parent when there's a big barrier or hole in their heart from a real life-changing issues? And so what does it take to undo that? We do that with the psychiatrist, Joan Luby from WashU, the chair of the psychology department from Washington University and a practicing psychiatrist, and trained therapists in our system that we have two therapists per every building, to the point where every school is a center for healing engagement.
Oh my goodness. Just so, so much packed in here. So many great takeaways. So this is something extra.
Yes.
You know, what do you believe, Art, is the something extra that every leader needs?
You know what? I was going to say something I always say, which is that the biggest room in my house is the room for improvement. So I'm always continuously working on my own improvement and others' improvement and so forth. So improvement. But I'm going to say even more important than understanding that is understanding your superpower. That I believe that everybody in the world has a turbo button. Let's use that analogy, thinking about the Mind Research Institute and game-based learning and so forth, if I were talking to a 10-year-old or a 20-year-old who loves video games, I would say, what is your turbo button? And if you can find that turbo button that's in your spirit, your soul, I promise you that it would give you extra power, extra strength, hope, courage, relationships, and clarity to your life purpose, because you have an inherent gift and song in your soul that you've been placed here to sing to the mountaintop so that your life is a chorus of that song. But to get that song articulated and sung, you have to tap into your turbo button. It's that button on any joystick that gives you more power than you would have had you not pushed it. And so every leader has to know themselves to find their turbo button. That's right. You got to, because once you find it, there's no stopping you. You are on fire and you are living within your purpose, and your gift will make more rooms for you than you can imagine. Think about a mansion. The biggest mansion you've ever seen, more rooms than you can imagine will be made once you're operating in your turbo gift and button.
Well, I am so glad that you found your turbo button early.
Thank you.
You guys, you're on a roll. So congratulations, Art, for what you're doing. Thank you. Thank you. You are raising up the next generation of leaders that are going to do amazing things. So we are so blessed to have you in St. Louis. So thank you for all that you're doing. You know, if somebody's sitting there, one of our listeners, and they're like, I am so jazzed right now, how could they get involved?
I would say reach out to me at any time. My email is easy. It's artmccoy, and then the number 2@gmail.com. That's my personal email. But we always are looking for the 3 M's and 1 W, and that is, anytime you want to mentor, be a mentor. Each one should reach one. So we need to have mentors for our kids to see career pathways and what leadership looks like. And it's not one size fits all. It's space for everybody. Number 2 is we need woman power and man power, the W and the M, so that you ultimately can understand that you are placed here to empower others, to enlighten others, and to engage others in a way that the system would not otherwise engage if it wasn't for you. So whatever idea you have, challenge those systems, especially school systems, to do more. And you are the person that's here. You're the woman power and the man power to help engage. And then lastly, there's always a need for money. There's so much that we can do. I mean, we literally have sister schools in Africa that my students raised $15,000 for to build wells in Africa with the water crisis in Kenya before COVID. And there's still crises there now. And the bottom line is, from money for that, to money for buses, to money for food, to money for minivans so that homeless kids don't look so hopeless and helpless by being picked up in a cab. Those are just a few of the initiatives that you can give money to, or your mentorship to, and ultimately some engagement through your workforce as a woman or a man with woman power and man power. So feel free to connect. I look forward to engaging with you.
Awesome. Well, Art, thank you so much. This has just been such a joy for me. And I just know that our listeners are going to be impacted, and you're doing good.
Thank you for leading a nation, because if you weren't here as the conduit to lift up leaders, then no one would know about it. So thank you so much for allowing this leadership to shine and show.
Very good.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.